Hi, welcome to Light Camera Author. I'm Jim Juno, and this is where we talk with authors who write books about movies, TV, and everything in between. And if you listened to one of our shows last week, you're familiar with this gentleman. His name is Joel Thurm. He was the casting director at NBC for 10 years, and he has a new book out called Sex, Drugs, and Pilot Season: The Confessions of a Casting Director. And this is his second time in 2 weeks on the show because we had so much fun the first time. We wanted to have him back. So welcome back, Joel.
Thank you. I'm just glad you're having me. Thank you.
No problem at all. I mean,
Twice, come on. Once is enough. Thank you.
you are a glutton for punishment. You're going to come back twice, you know. So the like we said before, book is Sex, Drugs, and Pilot Season: Confessions of a Casting Director. And Joel, like last time we mentioned, you were NBC's casting director for 10 years. Correct me if I get any of this
Well, no,
wrong.
you're right, but I just want to explain something. When you say I was, I was vice president of talent and casting. That doesn't mean that I necessarily cast anything myself, but I was, say, shall we say, a major force in deciding the casting of all our pilots, all our movies, and all our miniseries. But technically, I did not cast anything myself.
Okay.
Did I tell the producer, a friend of Family Ties, Gary Goldberg, that none of his original choices were good ones? And did I suggest, how about, and not a very original thought, but how about Meredith Baxter, like she's old enough to play mothers now, and to say something like, "Well, there's this guy you won't know in New York, and his name just went out of my head, who played the father."
Michael Gross.
Michael Gross, I said, "You won't know him, but close your eyes and he sounds just like Alan Alda."
He
So,
does. Yes, he does.
yes, and that's why I suggested him, because when I met him was after he had played in he was on Broadway in Bent, and he played a nasty German drag queen. So it wasn't that I saw him doing something related
Well,
to a half hour comedy. But
see,
anyway,
he could run for a GOP congressman now, you
He
know?
probably,
So
he probably, and he loves railroads. So if you can talk, let him run Amtrak, he certainly could do as good a job as anybody
that's
else.
true.
But
Now you all
I just wanted to correct that thing about being a casting executive and a casting director. So,
okay.
sometimes
That's
they
no problem at
overlap.
all. That's okay. No problem at all. And since we're on Family Ties, let's talk about the casting of a then unknown kid who became one of the biggest movie actors of the 80s and 90s. Probably, well, Michael J. Fox.
Well, the most important thing is he was one of the first, he and George Clooney, to break the wall between television and movies. Until then, you did either one. And if you were on, if you were, yes, you could always step up to movies, but if you did a movie, you didn't do television anymore. That's, and those two people broke it. And I think Michael was the first one.
Yes, indeed. And he was one of the few people who could power a movie just by him being in it. I mean, Teen Wolf, I mean, there was no reason that movie should have been a hit.
Well, but there was, you can name so many movies where they wouldn't have been hits, but you wanted to watch it because the star was so great and they made the movie work.
That's
You
true.
know, it's like I've said someplace in the book that casting is 90% of the success of a project, which, by the way, I think I was unknowingly quoting Mike Nichols, who wrote that in a book that I read. So that was on his autobiography. But no, Michael Fox came from the casting director, Judith Wiener, who is no longer with us. I mean, the first two choices were, Sarah Jessica Parker's husband,
Oh gosh, no, I'm gonna
Matthew Broderick. And
Matthew
then
Broderick, yeah.
the second was, when you get this old and you have so many names floating around, I'll forget them for a bit, but give me a clue and I'll get it back. And the second one was Zach Galligan, who turned it down and then turned it down. He had to he got he couldn't take it because he got the movie of Gremlins.
Wow.
So the third choice was the unknown actor that the casting director had been championing all along. So That's how he got the job. And by the way, the only one who didn't like him was my boss, Brandon Tartikoff, who was so wrong. But, but bless Brandon's now deceased heart when he said, OK, fine, all of you, if I'm the only one, fine. OK.
See, that that is something Brandon Tartikoff was willing to do. He would say, OK, I'm the only one, but I'll go with you guys. If you ever ran into like studios who say, you guys are wrong, this is who we want to go with, who should go with.
Yes, many times, but I'll have to try to think of who they were. Some person who was kind of like that was Stephen Bochco, Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
L.A. Law. Well, that L.A. Law was also with the I'm trying to think of another one, but.
Was it NYPD?
NYPD, yeah, but that was way after me. Was a different network too, I think. That was ABC. But Bochco was very, very wary about any suggestion from a network, any. And he, when the Hill Street cast was coming together, I mean, he really got incensed when I said, no blondes in this piece? Question mark? And it was a question mark. It wasn't a negative. It was an observation. And indeed there weren't.
That's right. But you mentioned the book, like Veronica Hamill would not, this was during the 80s, during the AIDS crisis. And Veronica Hamill, I cannot talk tonight. Veronica Hamill would not kiss Daniel J. Trevante.
Well, I didn't say that in the book. I don't think I said that in the book. What I think I said was, she went to Stephen Bochco and asked about kissing him. Now, I don't know. I don't know what the result of that was. I didn't watch it that closely, and I didn't know about that till way after. But I think that was at the height of the panic when nobody knew, how AIDS could be transmitted or anything, or not the height, the beginning of the panic. And I'm just guessing that later on, when things settle down a bit, and you probably have the years, in your notes better than I do. But she did go and ask to not have kissing scenes with him.
Well, see, he was closeted at the time.
Well, he wasn't closeted to the people he worked with on the set. He was closeted to the general public. But, the people, why would Veronica ask that if she didn't know?
True.
I think he was very open with, with the people he worked closely with. And I knew he was from day one because I knew that he and now maybe I'm outing Tyne Daly's father, James Daly, but. And I never saw them together, but I had heard that he and James Daly were in a long time relationship. I don't know whether it was over or under or whatever, but I started using him way before any of this on the Bob Newhart show. Forget this. I mean, Bob Newhart show. We had a group therapy group, and he was the second or third person to play the blue collar guy in the group. The first one, the second one was Mike Conrad, also from Hill Street Blues.
Right.
And the first one was a guy named Noam Pitlick, who went on to direct. So
yeah, I've seen that name.
Yeah, directing. He was, but that time you're not, and they all played that part. None of those people were in the contract. So when the scripts came up with the group therapy group, you hoped everyone was available.
Being that you were at NBC.
Yep.
And I don't know why this one name, I'll get to this name in a minute, but I got a couple of names that due to us having our last conversation, people have come to me and said, can you ask about this person? Can you ask about that person? and the one name that keeps popping up is Johnny Carson.
Yeah. Okay. I had very little to do with him, believe me. So I had no interaction with him whatsoever. And there would be no need to. He had a very, his name just went out of my head. Jim, oh God, maybe it'll come back. But his talent booker was a very, very nice guy, whose name, of course, went right out of my head now.
That's okay.
And the only person I was ever able to get on the Carson show was Joey Lawrence. Joey Lawrence, who went on Give Me a Break, because Jim McCauley, I think was his name, Jim McCauley. I sent him a tape of Joey Lawrence, you know, doing his Zest commercial in the bathtub, being more than cute, and him in Top Hat and Tails singing and dancing to Give My Regards to Broadway. So he's the only one that I was ever able to get on Carson. And when he did get on Carson, the kid gave a hysterical line when Carson asked him, well, have you ever seen the show before? And he said, yeah, when I was throwing up in the bathroom. Or on my way to throw up in the bathroom, you know, one of those. But the point is, it got a huge laugh.
Well, I want to stick with late night hosts. I don't know how much exposure you've had with him, but like, you know, David Letterman, was he any easier to get?
No, I had nothing to do. I was a different network. Wow. No, it wasn't different network at that time, but no, I had nothing to do with it.
Okay. Last name I'm going to throw at you, and I don't know why, because I don't think you've had any exposure with her or whatever, but Lucille Ball, did you ever have any exposure?
Well, yes,
with
I
her?
Did. I did have some exposure with her because she, early on, I think it was in when we were in desperation mode in the early 80s, she came in to, she had an idea for a pilot, and she was also going to direct it. And, you know, Lucy in the office was totally professional. And, you know, there was no Lucy from anything you've ever seen on television. She was there purely as the director of that pilot. I'm not sure she wrote that pilot. That I don't remember. But it didn't go anywhere and it was terrible.
I think that was Life with Lucy. Is that the last thing that she did?
No, I'm not. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I you know, it's all I remember was her. I can't believe Lucille Ball is in my office talking to me. that's what I remember about it. You know, so yes.
I was going to ask you, you mentioned Bill Cosby in your book.
Yep.
And of course, you say that, you know, you had no knowledge of what he was doing behind the scenes, yeah, with his personal life.
Yeah.
Don't really want to get into that, but Malcolm Jamal Warner came in and you tell the story about how he played the son, Theo, on The Cosby Show. And he came in acting rather differently than the Theo character that we've known on TV.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering, you know, can you tell me a little bit about that?
I mean, there's not much to tell, except he was way off base, and I don't remember what he was doing specifically in his reading that was way off base. But Cosby zeroed in on saying, is that the way you would talk to your father?
Yeah.
In other words, he was trying to do some acting thing, I guess, that he thought. And in the next, you know, he read again, and he read very well. He took that note as if Cosby was his father. And by the way, I will add one thing to what you said in the beginning. No one, zero, not one person connected with the show, either at NBC or at the Brooklyn studio where the show was shot, knew anything about that part of Cosby. None of us knew anything. We knew, yeah, there's always going to be flirting. And why not flirt? He's a handsome man. He's not exactly poor. And so, you know, people would flirt, even, you know, women who knew he was married. That's not an unusual occurrence. So that was the only thing that we heard, that he would, you know, that he would flirt and women would flirt with him.
Well, that happens with all famous people.
Well, of course it does. And yeah. If you know, it's not like he was Harvey Weinstein when you looked at him, please.
Exactly. And Nowadays, I could see Harvey Weinstein, but not back in the 80s.
And I probably will get shit for saying this, too, because Jeffrey Epstein was a very handsome man. know? So I shouldn't say that. But what I never understood was those people who were so handsome to start with doing anything like that. You know,
yeah.
You know, so anyway, that my point is said.
That's
next.
Yeah, same thing as what was his name on the Today Show? Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer. And what I don't believe is that Matt Lauer should be canceled forever. You know,
I don't either. Yeah.
How many other people did that? You know, and it's, you know, extreme PC-ism is like, you know, I think that's a new word, PC-ism, but it doesn't even need it. Extreme PC is just, I think, awful, just awful.
Well, it's like Al Franken. I mean, when he was.
Same thing. He's working his way back, but he did nothing. There was a photo. He wasn't even touching the woman's uniform.
Yeah,
that's just it. He was doing a joke that we've all done in one way or another. So anyway,
no, that's cool. I mean, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's if you're good at your job, okay, fine. I mean, should he have done it? No. Okay, I'll make it clear. But he did do it. I think he's paid the price. So let's move on from it. You know.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, they are. I mean, in what's his name's case, they are moving on. Senator
Al Franken.
Al Franken. They are moving on from that. Yes.
That's good. It only took them like 20 years. So, you know,
well, not but at least
I'm going to make some friends on this broadcast. I know that. you mentioned in your book about reality shows.
Yep.
And let me ask your opinion of the are reality shows good for the medium of TV?
Well, it depends who it's good for. Is it good for the networks or whatever, or the cable stations because of dollars? Absolutely, because they cost so, there's so much, what do you call it? There's so much less costly than scripted television. Do I like them? I like one or two of them. I think the best one was the Amazing Race, which I thought was terrific. Still do, but I haven't watched it lately. But then there's also other things that the American public seems to love, like all of Andy Cohen's works, the whole Housewives franchise.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's
right.
You know,
there is a segment of the American public that likes it. So, you know, if they like it and they're watching, believe me, if those shows were not being watched by enough people, they would not still be on the air. And I worked on one reality show. You know, called Pop Stars.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a forerunner of American Idol, but not as good. No, it wasn't. But I had a great time casting it. One Nicole Scherzinger came out of that casting, you know, about that search. And I also learned that, you know, these reality shows, reality is an odd title because in reality, If the words are not given to people, but they're given scenarios of what to act out. So, you know, some people don't know that. Some people think it is real, but it's really not real.
See, that was my next question, was how real are these reality shows?
I think you could call them semi-reality shows. You know?
Okay. See, that's what I've always wondered because, I mean, I think the very first one was Survivor.
Yeah, it probably was, you know.
Yeah, and I remember, like, there was like a big scandal that somebody said, "Well, this was an actor who," and I'm like, "Well, yeah, I mean, they're all actors, aren't they?"
Well, I don't think everyone on that show is an actor, but I think there probably were a couple. Mm-hmm. I'm not expert on that show, except I used to watch it in the beginning a lot. And at that time, it was even suggested that someone wanted to submit me to be a contestant.
Oh, why didn't you go?
I was in much, much, much better shape at that time and was I had been a long distance bicyclist. I biked from Seattle to D.C. and I did like California AIDS rides, which is a fundraiser ride from San Francisco to L.A. and two Boston, New York AIDS rides. So I used to bike ride a lot and was in really good shape. Believe me, it's all gone now. But, you know, I think I was in my mid 50s then, and I think I would have been good.
I think it would have been great. Yeah. You know, and now, did you ever Did you ever, how am I going to word this? I want to be careful. I don't want to offend anybody, or especially you. I don't want to offend you by asking
Nothing
this, but
offends me. Nothing
okay.
offends me at this
Do you
point.
ever have anything that just didn't plan out, you thought was going to be a real big hit, but just for some reason or another, it just didn't happen?
Well, there were many of them. And if I was looking at my book, I could tell you because I did a lot of that in the back of the book when I went through every single pilot. But there were a couple of like we got so many attempts for NBC to do a nighttime soap like Dallas or what was the other one?
Falcon Crest or
Falcon Crest. Yeah, the whole there were three of them on it. But we were never able to do one. And there was one, and I forget the name of it. It was called Behringer's. It was about a dynasty of owners of a department store like Bergdorf Goodman's in New York. And there was a woman who is in it who was like just an incredible person and actress named Anita Morris. If you don't know who she is, you might remember her from Ruthless People, where she and Danny DeVito were the villains and they
Oh,
had kids.
yeah.
Midler. She was that gorgeous redhead and with a body that did not quit. And she was a Broadway actress who won Tonys for she won a Tony, I believe, for the show Nine, where she was in a bodysuit that appeared nude with a little, what do you call lacy designs on it, where she was singing while on her back with her legs over her head, singing full out. She was able to, I mean, she was a great singer. She was an incredible dancer and an incredible person.
It just did, but the show just did not catch
It's
on with the
just
general public.
didn't, it was the whole series. We did a few of those. None of those nighttime soaps took, caught on.
Here comes the other side of the question. Did you ever think of something that was presented to you, or was pitched to you, and you thought, "Ah, this is nothing," and then it turned out to be a big hit?
Probably I can't think of it now. If I next time we do this, give me some of those questions I could research so I can be not sound like
Okay,
an idiot.
no,
There
you're
was
not.
another show that we did that should have been really good. It was based on a British show, and it was with Jack Klugman. It was a story about a middle class supermarket manager and his son, who was like a totally whacked out, crazy son. And hard as I tried at NBC, I kept telling them they wanted to cast, they meaning the producers of the show and my fellow executives at NBC, John Stamos, who did get cast in it. And I said, with John Stamos in there, the entire concept goes out the window. He's about as normal and straightforward as you could get. And there was another actor I wanted who was just like kind of nutsy, had spiky hair way before spiky hair was chic, and he had his own unique way of delivering lines. But hey, they didn't
Wow.
always take my advice.
Well, see that luckily they took your advice on the movie Airplane, because when we talked last time, you were telling me that they wanted Barry Manilow.
Well, no,
And
they didn't want. I No, let's get this straight.
okay.
The Zuckers and the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams did not want Barry Manilow, nor did they want any of Paramount's executives' suggestions.
That's what I meant, the executive select
Those
suggestions.
executives from Paramount, yeah, and Mike. I mean, somebody put. I don't know who it did, but someone put Manilow's name on some list somewhere for that role. Mike Eisner denies it. To this day, and I would too if I had written that, but I don't know. I'm not saying anything. But no, they knew they knew what they wanted. I mean, I went in with my list, and my list happened to coincide with their thinking, which was all those roles of the controller and all those, leading men roles had to be played straight, otherwise it wouldn't work.
Right.
And don't ask me why I knew that. I just knew that because I've been doing this for a while. And they wrote it because they had been doing their comedy for a while. So we were on the same page from the very beginning. So I would love to take credit for all of that, but I'm very I'm not good at assuming all the credit for myself on things, because it's wrong. And in this case, yeah, I was the casting director, but those guys were thinking along the same lines too. I did not have to twist their arms or do anything radical.
Were you at NBC when the Black Sheep Squadron was?
That was before me.
That was before you. Okay. But anyway, that for some reason Robert Conrad's name popped into my head.
Conrad did a lot of stuff at NBC while I was there, and he was a very smart man, and we had a very good relationship. And he would come into my office, and we would talk. And, you know, he was one of those people who, if there was a disagreement, you know, initially on something, we always found a way. So that was very good. I liked him.
That's great. I mean, well, I tell you what, Joel, I really appreciate you taking time again to come on the show. The author's name is Joel Thurm, Thurm. And the book is Sex, Drugs, and Pilot Season, Confessions of a Casting Director. It's out now. You can find it on Amazon or BNBN.com, or better yet, go to your local bookstore.
Well, the local bookstore, actually, no, don't go to your local bookstore. Oh, go to your local bookstore and order it. But yes, since this is a print to buy on demand book, so there is no backlog of books, and bookstores are, and if and when hopefully this book goes further and becomes, you know, is climbing up some sort of chart or something, I think then they will order it. You know, then the bookstores will stock it. But until then, they don't. But you can go into your store and request them to order it. Or you can also order it from Barnes & Noble's website, Amazon, and also directly from the publisher,
Bear Manor Media.
And they're all the same price. So, you know, choose your poison, or in this case, choose your good read.
Well, Joel, thank you again for being on Life Camera Author tonight.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.